to be mean was bad like a pop junk. Pop the trunk on Seaside for punk, leave him left scraped. God forbid, if ain't no escape, blame him left tape. Definition super villain, a killer who loved children, one who is well skilled in destruction as well as building. While Sidney Sheldon teaches the trife to be trifer, I'm trading science fiction with my man, a live lifer. A pied piper, holler a rhyme, a dollar and a dime. Do his thing, ring around the white collar crime. Get out my face, asking about my case, steam toothpaste. Professor Mint, monkey style nigga to death of death. And dope fiends still in their teens. Shook niggas turn witness. Real men's mind their own business. That's the difference between sissy pissy rappers is double dutch. How come I hold a microphone double clutch? COs make rounds, never have ox found. On shakedown, lockdown, wet dreams of Fox Brown. On doomsday, ever since the wound till I'm back where my brother went. That's what my tumor's.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is there is this thing?
Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing
on.
There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Off the Hour, right here on CKT 90.3 FM. We are 27 days into the month of May. We are broadcasting from unceded Mohawk and Anishinaabe territory. You are tuned into The Avalanche, a special presentation of CKT's Community News Department. The Avalanche seeks to cover issues affecting those with disabilities. I'm your host, Zoe. On today's show, audio from the newest Crypt Talk Corner on witchcraft and crypts. All that plus your weekly music pick right here on CKT 90.3 FM. You are listening to The Avalanche, where all abilities are welcome. If you'd like to get involved, you can call 514-448-4041 extension 6788 or email news at ckut.ca or follow us on Twitter at @avalancheckut.
Jesse boy, I see you with that look in
Welcome back to The Avalanche on CKT 90.3 FM. You were just listening to A Letter to Jesse Boy by Jordan Clayson. For today's episode, audio from the newest Crypt Talk Corner. Today's episode is entitled Witchcraft and Crypts. If you would like to listen to the full episode or would like ASL interpretations, videos of this audio can be found on Accessible Lies Montreal's Facebook page as well as the YouTube page hashtag Crypt Talk Corner. That's up now.
Welcome to our second Crypt Talk Corner. We're so glad to be doing this again with you. We had such a wonderful time last time, and so we're stoked to be doing this again. Today we wanted to let you folks know a little bit more about us, where we're coming from and stuff, and we thought we would get into it by talking about witchcraft. Mm-hmm. What else? You know, like, it's the obvious choice.
Mm-hmm.
Gif, do you want to tell folks about how this, how we brainstormed this topic?
So this is the thing, like, Amy and I, we don't have like traditional official brainstorming sessions. Our brainstorming sessions, they happen over a few phone calls. And then we piece everything together and then we come up with an episode or an idea. So we're having a talk, you know, and I was going through some stuff, you know, getting the COVID tests and the whole shebang. And then Amy was like, do you want for my witch friends to pray for you? I was like, say what?
Like, do you mind if me and my witch bitches do a spell for you?
I say, yo, get this stuff away from it. And then this basically started this conversation about like our upbringing and like our experiences with witchcraft, with the medical system, with the church, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. And so we thought that we would kind of bring some of those themes into today's discussion. Mm. And as always, we want you to write in. We want to hear from you. But we will read them all, and we do intend to follow up with another short video in the coming weeks as well.
Yeah.
So on that call, you know, we realized that, you know, the word magic links to a lot of things, and it's not just sorcery. It's not just some people's spiritual beliefs or other people's fears. It also relates to, you know, normalization and people's hopes for cures for things, and the different ways that like we view our bodies, basically. But why don't we start sort of from that point where we were on the phone there, Gift, and maybe we can talk about our differences in how we view witchcraft first, and then kind of move on to the other themes.
All right. So, we're on the phone, as I said, we're talking, and Amy started telling me about like this group that she's a part of, and they do like prayers and things like that. I was like, oh, really? Sure. You know, like the thing is, like, Amy and I have been friends for a little bit over 10 years, and we've never had a conversation about our upbringing, how our experiences were like dealing with like family, dealing with our culture, dealing with our religious communities, and also the medical systems. We never really talked about, we just like honestly always spoke about barriers. Like the social model really lives in us, you know? And even like to even the point of even like asking each other our diagnosis, that never even came up in our conversation. That was not important to us, you know? Mm-hmm. And
yeah, because we're always focused on like advocacy and trying to change our physical environment and trying to update policies that affect our lives and our communities. And it was almost like a, in a way, in my opinion, a statement against like diagnosis by just being like, let's just talk about our surroundings and what shapes our lives, rather than talking about like what, you know, medical professionals have labeled us, right?
Mm.
And that's all fine and good, except that as our sole focus in like these kinds of conversations does leave a lot out, and it leaves a lot of the emotional side of life out and the spiritual side too.
Mm.
And so, you know, it's like kind of cool to be diving into that with you a little bit more, Gift, because you know,
for sure.
Yeah,
it's interesting because like, you know, like we both come from like different worlds and worldviews, and it's like the little that we did in terms of diving in through those phone conversations, it was quite enriching, and I'm honestly like super excited to be going like deeper into this conversation with you, and also with our community out there.
Mm-hmm.
and allies.
Yeah. We got our first question or comment, sorry. Kate says, let's create a spell to require that all new housing be fully accessible.
Universal design.
Let's set it up. I would love to conjure up that that reality. Yeah, yes. That's great.
That's Kate.
Yeah, thank you. How true.
All right. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, so Amy, what was your first experience to, I don't know, magic or any form of, yeah.
As all good life lessons, I was probably introduced to it on Tumblr back in the day.
Okay.
I was not raised religious, and so both my parents, they did have like they did go to different Christian churches when they were young, but then they never kept it up. It wasn't really part of their like belief systems, and so it also wasn't in mine because it wasn't like passed on to me like often like faith things are passed on. So yeah, I grew up atheist. Like I was just quite opposed to religion. Because I saw so many negatives to it, and yeah, and I don't like the like submission side that comes from some religious traditions. And so yeah, that was sort of my upbringing was just like non-religious. And yeah, and then like I don't know, maybe in the last like 5 years or so, there's or maybe longer, but at least my introduction to it is maybe more in the last 5 years or so. And a lot of my like white femme queer peers have gotten into like sort of neo-pagan or like different spiritual practices and rituals that kind of resonated with me because it seemed more led like it seemed more like an open tradition. It was sort of like build it as you go, and a lot of the things that I was seeing were led by women and also queer people and trans folks, and so that's something that felt more welcoming to me too. And I think also just at that time in my life, I was like ready to connect more with, yeah, like spiritual things and like finding more meaning in nature and things. So that's sort of what like witchiness means to me. It's like kind of like a welcoming space.
Interesting.
And yeah, and I should say too, like last fall, I did my first more like formal ceremony, and it was led by my friend Pan. Shout out to Pan if they're around. And they had gone to Scotland for a bit, and they had sort of like connected with people through festivals there. And then so they brought some of those traditions that they had connected with from their like background and ancestry. They were staying with me and Jay at the time, and so we did this really cool festival around Halloween. It was called Samhain, and it was really special because it was kind of like, well, Pan's really good at like leading ceremonies and stuff, so it felt very structured, but also like room to be flexible and stuff. And so yeah, and then it seemed really simple after that. It was sort of like, okay, you can just do like a little whatever it is that you want to do. It can be your ritual. So
Right.
simple things, or like assigning meaning to different objects, and then every time you look at or touch those objects, it kind of like gives you a reminder of that thought or wish that you had when you sort of originally made that connection.
Interesting. For me, I guess my introduction has been like kind of like associated to trauma. to this. So in my motherland in Zimbabwe, I grew up in two worlds, in Christian world, that is my mom's side, and then the witchcraft like stuff through my dad's side of the family. And what was happening is like how do I call it? Organized religions that were kind of like pooling forces, kind of like doing like tug war, in terms of like which one will win. because on my dad's side, it's like they wanted to, quote unquote, normalize me, right? to be able-bodied. And not just only me, like even also like my brother, who's also a wheelchair user. And my dad very much believed in that stuff quite a bit. And to me, that was like a traumatizing thing to be a part of. And so anytime, like when someone would mention, or someone mentions witchcraft or whatever, I'm always like, to hear, you know what I mean? It's never like, because of my introduction was not a positive one, where it was like welcoming into something that was like, oh, okay, you choose what you want to practice, you choose how you want to approach this, but it was more like, we have to change, we have to fix this. This was an error from God. This was an error from God. And same thing even on the Christian side, right? Even though like my mom never pushed for this, but people in the church were pushing to normalize my body. And, you know, like people would come to my mom and be like, there's a prophet in town. He heals people. People are walking. You should take your kids, you know, and going through that experience, even if we're having like a normal church ceremony and we're not going for this prophet and this prophet just happens to be there, like you just come to us and start doing these things. And I'm like,
oh my God.
You know, like the prophet is praying over you or stretching your arms and legs. And
my God.
Both of those worlds were just too much for me, right? The way like I reconciled that was like maybe like later in my years as like late teenager, you know, leading to my old age where I was like able to actually assert myself, especially because like I'm Christian, right? So I identify more with like my Christian community now, and I'm able to assert myself when it comes to things like that, of like trying to normalize my body because like it's perceived as like not God's plan, and things like that. So so my introductions haven't been great, but when it was like in a space where I had control of like, you know, to pray, or you know, I was with people who gave me that space to just be me, I've had some quite healing moments that were not traumatizing. So there you have it. I mean, later on we'll jump into the medical system in terms of how the normalization took place for me, but for now that's it.
That's so awful though, that like especially as a child, right? Because it's hard to distinguish what you know internally from what you're being told through these actions, right? Like it's really hard as a kid to be like, actually I don't need like correction. I'm good. Like, so yeah, I feel for you for a little bit.
Because I don't know about you, but it's like for me, it's like when I was growing up, I started thinking like, oh, is there really something wrong with me? Maybe I should actually give in to one of these worlds or to both of these worlds and see what happens. Like maybe, maybe I'm not believing enough. That's when nothing is working, right? So you start to internalize those ableist thoughts.
Of course, especially if it's like people that you trust or that you're told to trust, telling you these things, right? Like, I mean, a parent or someone who you look up to in like a religious community. Course, it's hard to withstand like that kind of ableism.
Yeah, and like just to correct, I mean, like my mom like really tried to protect me and my brother from those things, but we were sometimes stuck in environments where it was hard to escape those spaces, and it was hard for my mom to like fully like push back, you know. So yeah, just want to put that out there.
Yeah for sure. I mean, it's hard not to see parallels between that and some of the like treatments that we may have had as kids, like in the medical world, because there's another sort of faith that goes into science and medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not at all the same in terms of the basis of it, because it's based on research and like testing different hypotheses and all this stuff. But at the same time, there is such a like, yeah, faith in it. And so I just like, I resonate with some of the things, even though it's like completely different side of the world and different basis for those things. But I do like see some links with like with the normalization process through medical treatments, especially for kids, right? Because you don't have consent when you're a kid, you know, and
those physiotherapists, you know, occupational therapists, like much respect. I have lots of friends who are OTs and PTs. Respect and love to you guys, and I'm sure you don't practice this, but
yeah.
Sometimes consent is like out the window. It's like, we are gonna do this. Do you feel pain? Yes. Good. That's how it's supposed to feel. Building muscle. You know.
Yeah, and I mean, there's like an imperative to try and pass, right? Like that's what's at the core of it, is like the more close to like a standard normal person you can get, the better, right? So then you try all these things to somehow fit that mold, right? So whether it's medical or like different traditions, not hot. Really not hot.
Definitely not hot.
Yeah. So do you want to jump into a few of the comments?
Sure, let's see what's up.
Okay, so we got a comment from Julien. Hi. He said, he said this a little while ago, but he said, all new and ultimately all existing. Very, very epic, Jay. Mm-hmm.
Next. Yeah.
Christine. Hi, Christine. Christine says, Amy, you mentioned you connected with your practice via white queer femmes, and I was wondering whether you can comment on reasons why that demographic might be particularly drawn to this type of practice. I can. I don't know if I'm right, because I have no idea, but I do think that like those types of people have been not less accepted by most, like a lot of different religious traditions. And then not all, of course, but like historically, gays and women, there wasn't that much like space for you to just be in those like traditions. And then also I'm speaking more about the like, what are they called? Like Abrahamic religions, like the three Christian, Jewish and Muslim ones.
Yeah.
Cause I know that there's a lot of other traditions that were also like kind of suppressed historically that were more matriarchal or weren't so led by men and punishing. So yeah, I think that's sort of why, because it's like there's a bit more mentorship or like role modeling of other women and queer people. That's what I would say about that. Yeah, but I'd love to hear other people's thoughts, because like I'm like a newbie and that's just my own personal theory. Thank you.
As well, I like that connection you're making between different kinds of faith, whether religious or scientific, and consent.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have like a pretty averse reaction to people like being close to me or like trying to move my wheelchair and stuff, and like I think it definitely comes from that, because when you're younger, you actually don't have agency, like, because you're a kid. So, yeah. I think consent is important for sure in those, even for little ones, you know? Like, Yeah, so someone said this probably relates more to gifts, experience, probably weirdly noticing the confluence of my upbringing in the satanic panic phase of the church in the 80s, melding with my experience of psychosis. That sounds like a lot.
I feel you. Honestly, it's been an interesting journey for me. So let's fast forward from the church now, going to the medical system. So when I moved to Montreal, to Canada with my family, when you basically immigrate here, you go through a series of medical testings. I was a big subject for all kinds of specialists. You name it, neurologists, cardiologists, they all wanted me. They were just like, gift Paul, we want to do this.
All the ologists?
All the ologists, man. You know what I mean? Like, if I was smart back in the day, I'd be rich right now. You know what I mean?
$15 a test.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I should have, like, signed those contracts and be like, you know what? Let's do this research. How much are we talking? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Let it rain. but honestly, basically, these medical professionals, they had weird concept, like notion of what kind of medical treatment did I receive in Zimbabwe. They thought I had received a zero. So they needed to reconstruct and do whatever they can to perfect me to the Western standards.
You mean reconstruct your body?
My body.
That's
to Western standards, because what was done in Zimbabwe was not up to par. Right. Was not
that's
good enough.
Terrifying.
Right.
I just need to say that. That sounds like a fucking horror movie.
it was, you know,
yeah.
It was. And so, like, my first introduction to one of the doctors, I mean, like, some of the medical procedures that were done on me, definitely they had a positive impact in the end, but it's the approach to it that made it pretty insensitive and jarring. I think things could have been approached differently, because the way things were presented to me were like, you're going to die if we do not do this. We need to do this. And one of the things that we need to do, a 12-hour surgery. I've never had a big surgery in my life, you know, like, and to dive into a 12-hour surgery was absolutely terrifying as a 12-year-old kid.
You were 12?
Yeah, I was 12.
Oh my.
Yeah. I was 12, diving into the 12-hour surgery. And I had to go through all kinds of tests. Like, do you have these diseases that are usually common in the southern region of Africa? You know, so you had to vet all that out first. And then now you go through the surgery, you know, and then there's follow-ups that went after that. And it was honestly really exhausting, because, like, all I wanted to do was just to transition smoothly to this new country, this new society. And it was just, like, a lot to be taking in, right?
Yeah. So was that, like, when, like, shortly after you came to Canada?
It was basically on our second year in Canada.
My word. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the first year was basically trying to check if we have any of those common disease from Africa, right? So, like, that was the first year. And then the second year was, like, the actual surgeries that I had. I went through like two different surgeries. And yeah. And to me, like that experience, I started losing faith in like specialists, particularly. I started even losing faith in Christianity because I associated Christianity to those like, you know, big profits that are making a pyramid scheme and making millions of dollars off of poor people, you know. It really took me a long time to actually like come back into the church community and to even come back into looking at the positives of like some of the medical system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because hearing all that, it does seem like it would take a lot of like personal work and unlearning and healing to then, in a way, come back to or have a new relationship to your like religion. Yeah.
Like my question, I don't know, like maybe Amy, you could answer this, and maybe even people who are watching, is why is there such a pursuit for correction and normalization or cure in all these different environments, right? In the medical field, in the religious field, even in the secular, I mean, even atheist field too, right? Like, there's the pursuit of like research, right? And correcting things and doing things. Like, why is there such a drive?
Dude, look,
I just don't get, like, it doesn't matter, like, what, yeah.
I think a few years ago, I would have said it's because people are disgusted by people like us. I'm so sorry, this is so dark.
Speak your truth, though, speak your truth.
I said a few years ago.
Speak your truth. Yeah.
I think that there is, like, yeah, some people are disgusted by divergence from the norm, shall we say, or just difference.
Mm.
So that's one thing that's like, but I also think that, let's think about doctors for a sec, right? Like, The way that they come to understand how people move or how bodies can do things is based on a really, really narrow history through their training. Because, for example, I mean, there's these articles that come out about how, like, women aren't included in tests for like antidepressant meds and stuff because males are just viewed as like the neutral test subject. And that's like current. So then if we're just thinking about, okay, women as a whole are like not seen as like valuable research subjects, then imagine how people who have a lot more identities or realities going on than just being like a woman, which is like pretty basic, then yeah, we're just not included. And so all of that stuff, it's not even like, I don't think that it's just as simple as saying like people hate disability or people are afraid of us or something. It's like, it's so ingrained in how people are trained in that field. And then, I mean, until recently, like, people didn't have platforms either. So, like, advocacy was much more on, like, an individual basis. And it's hard to self-advocate all the time, you know. Like, now we're more emboldened by our communities and stuff. I'm not saying it's not hard, but, like, the amount of stuff I've learned from, like, disabled Twitter or whatever is, like, so huge, right? So I think, yeah, it's like a huge clusterfuck. What do you think?
Man, I think folks. I honestly blame this on capitalism.
Lay it down, Gip. Lay it right on down.
I blame this on capitalism because it's like the drive to normalize, right, someone or to correct something. It gives you social capital. It gives you status, right? So now if we look at doctors, when they are able to correct something, to correct someone, and it's something that's never been done before, what does that do for them? Right? It elevates them in terms of like their specialty, right? And they get some sort of notoriety, like they are experts in blah, 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 blah. They have done X number of surgeries with this much risk, blah, 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 blah. Bingo, there we go. Millionaire, right? Second, we have pastors. Same thing, social capital, right? They're trying to gain social status. Same thing. And whether that's being portrayed like within the spiritual realm or financially, it's still part of like the capitalism scheme.
So you mean like people are building their careers on our backs, basically.
Basically, like, I don't think, like, yes, there may be, like, uncomfortableness or disgust in, like, you know, the way we look or whatever, right? But the drive or the motivation behind it all is for their own social gain, whatever form that's going to take. That's my opinion around that.
Dang, guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. Yeah. I said too much. But
no, you really didn't. No, I mean, I think it's really important to point out the, like, financial side of being a specialist and of these people who claim that they do miracles, right, in whatever field.
And you know, like, when I look at Christianity, right, and like some of these prophets, like God, when, like, let's say Jesus was performing miracles, it was not in like people's commands. And sometimes the people are like, oh, why didn't you heal this person? And like, no, I just want these people to see the goodness in the goodness that you do not see in this person. Right, that's what Jesus said. Like, Jesus was not in the business of like going and performing miracles left, right, and center at will. It was like all about the timing, and it was not about his like social elevation or social capital. That's like the misconception that like some Christian folks have, right? That like, oh, it was Jesus was doing all this stuff all the time. Why can't we do it?
Oh, I see. So like people take it literally, like,
exactly. And miracles don't happen on command. You know what I mean? So yeah, that's where I'm at with that stuff.
So Kaya wrote, wait, hold on. Okay, Christine said about fixing people.
Okay.
That it can also come from ego, where doctors want to succeed in their profession, and therefore there is a, to heal a healthy body. And then she goes on to say that no one wants to fail at their job as they understand it. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, it is like, and
am I just reading that again?
Oh, it's, yeah, just, sure. Yeah. Thanks, Brooke.
No, shout out to Brooke. Do you mind reading it but putting it off screen?
Oh, yes. Charles, do you mind to remove the... thank you so much. Yeah. So Christine says motivation to fix people can emerge from ego. Doctors want to succeed in their profession. And the imperative there is to heal to a healthy body, as Amy says. There's the training they undergo. No one wants to fail at their job as they understand it.
True.
Yeah. True. And Kaya wrote in. Hi, Kaya. And I'm going to read what Kaya wrote. I think historically queer and trans folks and women have always been embedded in these practices and traditions, which is precisely why these kinds of knowledges are on the margins. Colonizers and Christianity banned and appropriated aspects from Earth-based traditions in order to disempower those people and cultures. Thanks, Kaya. Yeah, that's a really important point. Yeah, it's interesting looking at how some versions of, let's say Christianity, like, uses practices that came from, yeah, like Kaya said, like, earth-based traditions in order to, like, from, like, looking back at history, it seems like it was, like, a tactical move or a strategic way to make people feel like they were part of the imposing or colonizing tradition, while at the same time like erasing the like the main essence of the actual faith or practice. Jessica Watkin wrote in. Hello, Jessica. Pardon me. Do you think that faith and witchcraft have space for Crip interventions and reclamation? I think so. I do think so. I don't know what that might be like, Jessica, but I like that idea. It's cool. You know, I guess when there's flexibility in what you're doing as your ritual, then
exactly.
If you're Crip, then it's just sort of a Crip ritual in a way. But that's cool. I'd love to hear about what you think about that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I noticed that we actually, pardon me, taking it back a little bit to when we were talking about fixing and normalizing in the more medical system, Jay actually wrote in, and hi Jay, and he wrote as someone, oh Gift, do you want to read this one or do you want me to?
Sure.
Yeah.
Let me find the comment here. I don't know, Charles, okay. Is it a good comment to display? Oh, it's too big. Yeah, let's not display it. You're blocking off Brooke there. All right. Perfect. Sorry, Brooke. All right. So Jay here said, as someone who has some ambulation, you get really pushed as a kid / teen to walk as much as possible and stay as far as possible off wheeled mobility devices so that you don't end up confined in one of these devices. But you miss out on so much of the freedom that it affords and the social opportunities that come with it. Wow, dude, that's huge. That's huge. I've never thought of that because I've never experienced that. But that's really interesting that it also would hinder some social opportunities because basically these mobility devices they give you that freedom, that autonomy to access specific social environments and even to express yourself in other ways too, right? But that's huge. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Julian.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, it's something that we've talked about. Me and Jay have talked about that because I don't know if you know this gift, but Jay was my gateway drug into mobility devices.
Yes, I remember. Please, can you elaborate on that story for the people?
Yeah, so we're, I mean, I had used like a manual wheelchair before, but I had never used a powered one.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we were on a trip once and I was really frustrated because I wanted to like go around and see all the beautiful nature and stuff where we were. And then he was like all the way there. He was like, hey, we're going to rent you a scooter. And I was like kind of resistant because it's new and I was just like, I don't know. Nah. But then one evening we were having just like a barbecue outside and then he was like, you know what, just go take mine just for a minute. I'll just sit in this. Like he was just sitting in a a chair, right? He's just like, go try this. And then like I fucked off for like a good half an hour. I was like, yeah, baby. And yeah, you know, it's been a great time ever since. I mean, it's really true. Like I have a similar experience with that where it was always seen as like a weakness if I needed a mobility device. And I don't know if that was just my own internalized ableism, but I think it was also somewhat from, it wasn't even offered as an option by OTs or doctors or anything, because I think the underlying assumption was that it was, it wasn't as healthy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know if you recall this, Amy, but I remember when you first got your own personal scooter, we did a drag race on St. Catherine Street.
Of course I remember.
It's just so exciting because, guys, if you didn't know, Amy is quite competitive and quite a crazy driver, honestly. Y'all think I'm crazy, but she's... Yeah. It was an interesting experience.
Yeah, and I think the
Sorry, I missed that. Can you say again?
She was like, "Eat my dust." Oh, yeah. Good times.
Pretty much.
We have another.
Pretty much, yeah. Oh yeah, but so I'm noticing that, like I don't know, Gift. So you said that you had to like rework your relationship to your faith.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
Honestly, it was a friend who was curious about Christianity that actually brought me back into my community. Because for a while, what was going on is I was doing church, but it was not part of my belief anymore. Like I checked out, but I was doing all the churchy things, ritual things, but it was not part of like my personal genuine practice, if that makes sense. So a friend of mine was like exploring faith, different faiths, started asking me questions about my upbringing to Christianity and, where does like the compassionate side come in with regards to the Christian community, blah, blah, blah. So all those questions were actually therapeutic and healing for me to start thinking critically and to do my own personal research in order to actually like answer that person more objectively than my cynistic views that I had built up all the years. So that's how I actually like came back into the community and reconciled all those things. Yeah. Mm. So that's how, yeah. So that's how it all went down. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a good time to plug your other Facebook live streams, because I think that you and Dwight and Terry also touch on some of these things, like in your discussions. So for people who are interested, which is everyone, obviously, because it's amazing. Gift is also doing a podcast called Unashamed Truth, and you can just find them through the hashtag Unashamed Truth. They also have their own Facebook page, right, Gift?
Yeah.
And so they do discussions similar to these, but Gift, do you want to give a little rundown of what you guys are talking about?
Do you realize consciousness is affected? There is this thing going on. Do you realize our consciousness is affected? There is this thing going on. What is called
the news? I'm brought to you live.
Just listening to an episode of Crypt Talk Corner on Witchcraft and Crypts, hosted by Amy Liu and Gift Chuma. That completes this episode of The Avalanche, a special edition of Off the Hour, airing every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m. To stay up to date with The Avalanche, you can follow our Twitter at AvalancheCKUT. Again, that's at AvalancheCKUT. Thank yous are due to all those who make educational and inspirational radio here at CKUT possible. If you would like more information on anything you heard tonight and would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact the Avalanche at @AvalancheCKUT or CKUT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or email news@ckut.ca. Stay tuned for Hearsay. That's up next.
Swanee Parolpopolo is back, and in real life for its 22nd edition. All the sights, sounds, and sensations of live music. After 2 years of online adaptation, Swanee is filling up the month of June with liberated music of all genres. Over 45 events and 90 participating artists performing indoors, outdoors, streamed for maximum accessibility. Record and book launches, workshops, a puppet show, a satellite Swanee happening in Wakefield, Quebec, of all places, and, of course, much more. For all the goodies, check out swaneeparolpopolo.org. Masks will, of course, be required. For your audio program guide, tune into the Montreal Sessions, Tuesday, May 24th, May 31st, and June 7 and 14th, from 3 till 5 p.m. The Swanee crew hosts will be serving up highlights of what to expect at this year's festival. This is, of course, a CKUT co-presentation.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. No boundaries. Feel alive.
Schemes. You can laugh till your dreams fall apart.